Hare Krishna. Welcome to Take Note with Ananda and Kaylee. We're here with two lovely and wonderful people, Bali and Tanya Rico. Thank you both for being here with us.
Thanks for having us.
Howdy, Bo.
Hare Krishna. We're so excited. Me and Kaylee had a dynamic and ecstatic little brainstorm session, and when ecstatic and dynamic, those are the key words. And when we had the idea of having you both on with us, our hearts about leaped out of our chest. So we're happy that you're both agreed to be with us. So
you are the result of a dynamic and ecstatic brainstorm.
Dynamic and ecstatic brainstorm. So we're gonna start with something a little bit special that you didn't even know was gonna happen. Mm-hmm. It's called the Take Note Rapid Fire.
Ooh.
So Kaylee and I have a list of rapid fire questions.
We haven't done this before. So
if
it's absolutely hilarious, then that's the success.
Jimmy Carter, the Emancipation Proclamation.
Exactly.
Waterloo.
Trivia to the max, but this is going to blow your mind. And we have not tested any of these questions.
Hold on, Ananda. Hold on. Before we jump into this.
Yes. I was just jumping in.
I know you were. You were going to go for the deep dive. But I think, first off, Ananda, I think you're really good at introducing these podcasts. But can you just like give us a little bit more before we go straight into the quickfire?
Because
that's going to be an explosion of fun.
Yes.
And, I think the viewers should know just a little bit about Bali and Danya before we... before we like assault them with questions.
Okay. Sorry, I'm in a mood. So yes, Take Note, essentially what we're here to do is we're here to literally take note, to look at all of the wonderful opportunities we have to connect on a deeper level, both spiritually, communally, right? Through the practice of bhakti and the aesthetics and the beauty that is bhakti that we all have the opportunity to practice, to really dive into meaningful and heartfelt conversations with creatives and thoughtful persons alike, to really pull out the sweetness. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for the sweetness.
And we're just a couple of honeybees, aren't we, Ananda?
Little honeybees. And of the sweetest of the sweet, we found some sweet devotees. Bali and Tanya are very sweet devotees, both incredibly talented, incredibly just kind and nourishing in both their own spheres of life, being able to give so much of themselves to others. And we're here with them today to really dive into the journey of creativity. What is that journey of creativity, and how have they experienced it, and how can we deepen that journey, and what does that journey really mean to us? So Kaylee, do you have anything to add to that?
I thought that was fantastic, Ananda. Great. But okay. But yeah, that's what I'm really interested in, because I guess there is a lot of sweetness on the Take Note podcast this evening. Mm. But for me, there is also like a mix of awe and reverence, because Bali and Daniel Rico are just mind-blowing personalities, and but we especially want to focus on like creativity this evening, because you both do so much. And creativity and expression and those offerings are a big part of your life, but you know, one of many parts of your life. But yeah, I really want to try and like extract some insights from you both this evening. And
we want to hear things that no one else has heard before.
Ah. Yeah,
that's our goal.
I wanted to focus on as well, like how, for me, this recurring theme is coming up. About creativity. Mm. Like is the success in the product, or is it in the process, you know? Mm. So I wanted to specifically focus on that today. But before we do that, let's assault them with some quick fire questions.
Gettysburg.
Okay.
I got it. I'm ready.
Okay.
Hold on. The rule is you both have to answer every question, and you only get 5 seconds.
Kelly's a hard cookie over here.
Each.
Ming dynasty.
Okay, you are disqualified, Valerica.
Okay, you guys ready?
Yes.
Ready. Okay. Kelly, you ready? Because you need to be ready too. You can't be sipping water.
I was preparing. You start,
okay.
Amanda.
Okay, here
we
go.
I just want to make sure, is this sound, because we have this coming out of a speaker. I want to make sure that
you can sound, hear us.
You can hear us. Everything's
okay.
Good?
Yeah.
Okay, good. It's
good to us, yeah.
Because you guys have fancy mics.
And if you are watching, we want to welcome you. Thank you for watching this Take Note podcast. Please, along the way, engage with us. We'll engage with you. Even we may bring you on board on a random and spontaneous whim. So write in your questions, write in your reflections. We want this to be an engaging community. We want to take note together, because then when we all take notes, we can harmonize and we can make some beautiful things. So here we go. Question number one, favorite dessert, go.
Cheesecake.
Oh, I was going to say cheesecake too.
They can repeat, answers can repeat.
Are you guys married? Okay. All right. Favorite meal? Savory.
Burritos.
Dosa.
Ooh. If you could travel back in time, where would you go and when?
I'd meet Shila Prabhupada.
What'd you say? Sorry.
I'd meet Shila Prabhupada.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say when Lord Chaitanya was on the planet.
Ooh.
Wow. Okay. That's good. What did you both dream of being when you were young children?
Oh, can I say his answer? I know what his answer is.
Yes.
He wanted to be a dinosaur.
Oh, I was going to say dinosaur.
Yes.
Did it ever come true, Belly? Velociraptor or Stegosaurus? What are we talking?
He's the Velociraptor. Like
Go on, Ananda.
No, Danya needs to answer.
Oh, sorry.
Danya wanted to be a powder puff cream pastry.
Wow.
I don't know.
I don't know. A teacher?
No, I don't know. I don't know that I thought about it much. I don't know. I don't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. I guess a psychologist, something like that. Eventually that kind of went somewhere.
I wanted to study dinosaurs, and then I wanted to play sports, and then I wanted to be a teacher, and I think I'm still figuring out. I don't feel like I've grown up yet, so I've got a lot of dreams.
Nice. Wonderful. Okay, Kaylee, go. Oh, no, is it my turn?
You.
Tell us one thing that no one knows about you.
I don't know that there's anything no one knows about me.
I reveal a lot of things to a lot of people, so I'm trying to go back.
Well, I had a U-turn with cilantro, which is interesting because Danya means cilantro. It, like in India, when you say Danya, it's like Danya, like coriander. I had a U-turn with that. I didn't like it my whole life growing up, and now I like it. So I don't know if that's scintillating enough for this podcast.
That's
it's
great.
Actually changed my culinary experience.
Wow.
Man.
Can you top that?
How do you beat that?
The scandal. So this is something that a lot of people don't know outside of my immediate family. I was in the ISKCON New Orleans temple and fell out of a second story window and broke my leg when I was 3 years old.
Oh my God.
So yeah, every time I go there, I am reminded. I was really little, and it's actually one of my earliest memories is breaking my leg. So
a second story window?
That's what they say. I don't know.
What were you doing, man? You're trying to be a dinosaur or something.
Yeah, exactly. I was like,
pterodactyl. Yeah.
Exactly. And then I leapt to my doom. But I made it. I made it.
Oh my goodness.
We are so glad you're still alive, Valerico.
Thank you.
Okay, my question. So if there's one person, dead or alive, that you could collaborate with, who would it be?
Yamuna Devi.
Wow. Iyengar Prabhu.
Nice.
Okay, I mean, you almost answered this, but what's the closest you've come to death?
That window. No, one time we were, I was with Kapila Monet and a group of friends in Vancouver. or outside of Vancouver, we were at Sharanagadi Farm, and from there we went to go snowboarding. And as we were winding up this mountain, we hit a patch of ice, and the car started fishtailing and swerving. And you know, I was like, Christian, I could see the edge was like a few hundred feet drop into a ravine with some like rocks and river on the bottom. And we ended up like getting all the way to the side and like, you know, doing like a 180. We were flipped facing the other way on like the side of the road next to the fall. I remember I was, you know, I was like, Krishna. I was, I think, 18 or 19. And Cap was just going, calm down. He was literally just like ice, just super relaxed. And yeah, that was pretty, that afterwards, I was like, wow, we could have really died from that little patch of ice.
Wow.
Yeah, I think mine was also a car thing. I was 16. I was working at CompUSA, which is like kind of a Best Buy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I stopped at a stop sign and started kind of, it was a four-way stop, and I started kind of rolling forward, and some guy in a pickup truck came and just T-boned me, and my car like spun around, and there was glass everywhere, and it was like super scary. And the worst part is, I, you know, young driver, like it was nighttime, I was like a young woman alone, and the guy didn't even get out of his car. He just sat there waiting for the cops, and some neighbor lady in the neighborhood where the accident happened came out and just like hugged me, and I was like, and I asked her to help me call my mom, and it was pretty awful. And the dude just kind of sat there in his pickup truck waiting for the cops, and it was awful. And I don't think I realized how dangerous it was until I stepped out and I saw the car, and I remember thinking like, that's not my car, because it was just crushed. It was like a V. It was pretty scary.
A secret that nobody knows, actually, that's being revealed today, is I was the one driving the pickup truck.
No.
Stayed in the car.
No, I knew it wasn't time. Like, we were destined to be together forever, but it wasn't our time to meet.
I don't want to ruin this. Yeah.
Yeah. That's hold back. Right now on the Baraka podcast. It is
official. That's my wife. That's my wife. But I'm not going to.
I had to wait a few years.
Oh my goodness.
Hare Krishna. This is awesome. Okay. Okay. Superpowers. Hit me. If you could have one superpower.
Time control. Stop, manipulate, move forward, backwards, time.
Easy. Memory. Just like perfect memory.
Wow.
Okay. If you could bring someone back from the dead, who?
My mother. Definitely.
I'd go with his mom too.
There you go.
Wow. Confirmed.
Yeah. I was too young. I would love to have a few more years and to introduce Namamalia to her grandma.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That would be like just such a cute moment in time. Just like hearts would be melting. Okay, my go. Would you rather have an extra arm or an extra ear?
That worked.
So like either you can have three arms.
It's got to be the arm. Can you imagine being live and being able to have a shaker? Like when you're playing Mridanga and you had to have one. When the drum picks up, easy.
Yeah, I'd go with extra arm too. It just seems so practical. You'd be able to do so much more. I feel like an extra ear, it'd be like almost too sensitive. Like I'd just be overwhelmed a little bit. So yeah, extra arm for sure.
That's awesome. Okay. Would you rather be tasked with getting a giraffe through a normal human-sized door or feeding a whale without using your arms?
I think a whale. I feel like I could fling something with my toes.
Mm-hmm. I would just tell the giraffe I had a secret, and then they'd be like, what? And I'd be like, and you say, whisper really softly. And as they like lean in, then you just slowly edge backwards into the room. And then there you go. Easy.
There you go. I like the tactics. Congratulations.
Amazing. Okay. I like this quick fire thing. And I do too. I think we should keep it.
I think it's part of our little.
I feel like you guys are naturally good at that kind of thing. Like I was looking at these questions and really thinking like, wow, I can't really answer these you know, it was taking me a while.
These are questions we actually ask each other. Like, there's been a lot of these kinds of questions in our relationship where we'll be like, would you rather like die burning or die drowning? And then like, we kind of like get into like the reasons why, you know, that kind of thing. So there's been a lot of road trips in our life. I think when you're a touring musician, you just have to figure out how to make conversation. So yeah, it's not out of our
traveling style. Extensive traveling exhausts normal conversation pretty quickly. And after that, it's like if you were a taco, what taco
only
would you
three
be?
Topics.
And then everyone's like arguing about it. Somebody punches someone in the face.
No,
like,
avocado. I would have avocado.
Exactly.
I can vouch for that. One time we had driven, I was with a group, is when I was a monk, and we had driven about 18 hours from San Jose back to Colorado. And for some reason, I think we were on like a time crunch. Anyway, we were renting a car and we had to bring the car back at a certain time. Mm-hmm. So we decided foolishly to just drive through the night. We didn't stop. And so I woke up at 2 a.m. or something, or like 3 a.m. to two of the monks who were driving, who were so tired, but they were endeavoring with such like earnestness to stay awake. The conversation was nuts. They're like, oh, I see that. It just had disintegrated into the anyway, little tangent, but
it gets weird pretty quick.
It gets weird real fast.
Yeah. I think this is a perfect transition actually into the crux of the conversation. I would like, I know both you and Bali very well, but like Danya, I'd be really interested to hear of your creative journey, physically traveling around, touring and such, and perhaps like in a shorter time span. Like I've seen, I don't know if you, Danya, you're doing this 100-day project thing at the moment, and you know what that looks like for you on a daily basis, the creative journey. Do you get to the end of a day and there's nothing? Do you get to the end of the day and there's everything and you've completed, you know, a composition or a work of art or something? And like, you know, what's the joy? What's the experience? What's the fulfillment? What's the nourishment? You know, like, where's it found for both of you along that journey? What's the kind of significance of that? Be great to hear.
Mm-hmm. So I believe it's 1812 is the year that occurred. that is a big, heavy question. Let's cut it down into biteable chunks. As far as musical history, grew up, went to Gurukul, did kirtan, just like many people in my generation. There was a really big resurgence of centralizing kirtan to our movement. It's always been, I mean, kirtan has always been the Yuga Dharma. There's always been people who have been preaching that and living that for a long, long time. But, you know, like the kirtan festivals, for example, didn't exist when I was growing up. That didn't happen until I was basically in my 20s. A festival was like, we're not going to do anything, but, you know, just chant Maha Mantra Kirtan for 24 straight hours. Did not exist all throughout my childhood and youth. We have stories of it happening in Prabhupada's time when, like, Prabhupada was ill, or he would tell his disciples, you know, please chant all the night through. But as far as organizing entire melas around kirtan, it really only started, I believe, like in the 2000s. And a lot of my generation, the latter generation of Gurukulis who catch the tail end of the Gurukul generation, not the ones, like I went to Gurukul in the late 90s. So by that time, a lot of things in ISKCON and in the Gurukul system had changed. I had a very nice experience. And when we came back, I was 16 years old, and a lot of our crew really started getting into kirtan in a very like pronounced way. Not just like, oh, you know, we get together and jam out after the Sunday. It was like weekly. There became like discipline. People were doing hours of kirtan you know, a day or a week. It was just a way of connecting, and a lot of friendships and bonds were made in like a very formative period of all of our lives. So, you know, Vishwambar, Akish, myself, there was Ananta and Gauravani, Amal, like all of these people where we kind of bonded and did a lot of very important, what I believe in actually the history of ISKCON, important festivals, like the Festival of Inspiration and the 24-hour Kirtan that was in New Vrindavan. I think that was 06 or 07. And then it began to catch on, and then and multiple coolies from different communities started really getting serious and having, like, you know, Facebook obviously connected things, MySpace, I guess, which was what was going on then, to create these like very interconnected global groups of kirtan. And we started doing a lot. And at a certain point, Vish, Kish, and myself, we had come from Gurukul and we made the Mayapuris a group. We did mostly Mridanga presentations and we would do kirtan for whatever festivals there were. And we started, you know, basically we were offered and we took the initiative also through Gauravani and through Kaylee Lita and Sachi Sutta to start an actual group and do it like in an organized way. And I think that is a big theme of my creative journey, is the union or the bridging between the right and the left side of the brain. So it's so important to be creative and to have just like that super art, just like let it flow. But then that like organizational, mathematic, computational, logical side of the left, that's when like magic is created, because you can have somebody who's composing the most beautiful things, but if they don't get it to paper and it doesn't get recorded in a nice way with good equipment, with like actual somebody who has like analytical study of mixing and mastering, it's just an idea. It still has all of its value, all of its artistic value, but it needs to be presented and packaged and organized. And so I think, you know, there had been a lot of that creative artistic expression and the culture of kirtan and bhakti going on for many, many years. But starting, you know, in the 2000s, mid 2000s, it was like, okay, now we're gonna do something. We're gonna organize melas, invite senior devotees, and invite you know, people who perform kirtan to these things and make it like a structured thing. And everybody, you know, they'd make a whole handout with who's gonna sing when and slots and all. It became much more organized, and that just built upon itself, and it created, you know, a culture of like traveling kirtan that was structured, and it was performed. It was musically more sophisticated. You know, we would get sound system, travel with entire gear, like it actually became a thing, and we traveled like what a touring band would travel. And we entered mostly the yoga scene, because there is a big kirtan scene in North America, in the Western, in the yogas. There's a big kirtan scene. I mean, tens of thousands, millions of streams and listeners, and, you know, concerts that are going on all over the world. And we kind of plugged into an already existing scene. And because of, you know, Prabhupada's mercy and because of Mahaprabhu's, you know, grace, it just took off. Like the people, what our tradition of kirtan coming from Prabhupada and from Mahaprabhu and, you know, like Iyengar Prabhu and all of these amazing like Bengali kirtaniyas that influenced our style, really, really made an impact. And we kind of found a lot of support in that world. And then that kind of, you know, our home community seeing that we were getting, you know, a lot of encouragement and acknowledgement and support, then it kind of built off each other. And then it just created a lot of energetic exchange between lots of different communities, from college campuses, yoga groups, concert halls, music festivals, devotee festivals, community programs. I mean, everything from funerals to festivals, you know, anything in there, we were just engaged in doing a lot of kirtan and travel, and became just like essentially a touring group where we would integrate the culture and art and the storytelling and the philosophy and just sharing who we were and doing our own interpretation and reflection of our growth and our musical backgrounds to record. We recorded our first album, Mridanga, in 2010, have toured all over the world, I think six continents, some like 30, 40 countries, I'm not quite sure, a lot. And we released our second album in 2019, Nine Islands. And I'm part of the Mayapuris. And then on my own, I make hip hop music. And I've talked a lot, so I'm going to, I just realized I told you my entire life story. I'll tell you about my blood type, my social security number, my high school, my favorite.
I want to hear more about the dinosaurs.
Yeah, the dinosaurs, you know, Iguanodon, Spinosaurus, Stegosaurus, you know.
I want to point real fast about when you have an idea, I mean, especially as the world of music and just how kind of globalized, you know, when Prabhupada, when you speak about like what Prabhupada did, right, when he kind of opened up the world, especially in this, for this kind of spiritual revolution that took place and everything that has come consequently because of that, it's really amazing thinking about how, you know, and especially even kind of looking at the music industry just in general, that it's an industry of ideas and streams, right? We're just as quick as you can get ideas out. That's the thing. And how I appreciate this point of you can have a really powerful concept, a really powerful song, but then the organization around it, how can you get it to, how can you bridge it from your experience and your creation of it to other people experiencing it? Right. Mm-hmm. And still maintain the integrity, maintain the essence. Right. I think that's just a beautiful point of, yeah, we have to organize our ideas. Like Prabhupada, you know, like Prabhupada was instructed to write books, right? Or to share Krishna. And he was writing magazines. Someone told him, they're like, oh, you should write books actually, right? Just the way that written word, recorded audio, right? How we take these ideas and share them, distribute them.
Yeah, Prabhupada was the spiritual force. But he was also an amazing administrator and planner. He was not just this huge fountain of like Krishna's might and grace and spiritual potency. He also built an organization, an international and global society from the ground up. And that requires intellect and, like you said, you know, organizational skill. For something to be successful, you have to have both. You can't just have good ideas or talent. That's it. I mean, if you don't have the other aspect, or it's possible you don't have it, but if you don't connect with someone who can fill that part of you that maybe you don't have, listen, I can't organize things. All I can do is, you know, play my banjo. It's like, well, there's some other person there knows everything else that you need to get that banjo playing out into the world. So if you can't find it within yourself to bridge the right and left side, then you find partners and collaborators who can help you with that. Mm.
Can I, I'd love to kind of get Daniel's reflection, and this point that is coming up for me a lot recently is how parameters and discipline can be a catalyst for creativity. People think that creativity is just this free, volatile, you know, imaginative kind of thing, but actually how powerful some parameters, some discipline can be. So first off, Daniel, I'd love to hear a little bit about your backstory as well. That'd be super cool. And then you know, how these kind of thoughts are shaping your creative expressions today as well, and as a mother as well, and your professional life. Be great to hear some of that.
Yeah, so I grew up in a family where my dad's profession was to be a musician. He's a singer-songwriter, and he had great success. You know, he was very well known and popular throughout, you know, the U.S. and Central and South America, the Caribbean. So I kind of came into the world without this doubt that I think a lot of artists encounter, which is, can I do this full time? Can I do this for a living? Is it sustainable? And does it conflict with my spiritual life? Like, those for me were not questions, because I was born into a situation where like everything harmonized. Mm. So I mean, full circle, I run into these questions again now, you know, in my own process, but, you know, and my mom also worked, but she had more of a kind of regular, you know, office job in medical research. And so I always had that balance of like, you know, you study, you work hard, and you want to learn things that kind of lean towards education, that lean towards investigation. That's very much like in my nature, but then also art and creativity. So again, that it's a seeming paradox, but it's not really contradictory, which is you can have quite an analytical mind, quite a scientific mind, have a knack for organization, thrive in structure, and be very creative, which I think is what you're getting to, Kaylee, which is like, what if the structure is actually what helps grow your creativity? It gives shape to your creativity. So I feel like I live that. I think that when people are really thriving in their art, they don't have to implement external forms of discipline because it flows very naturally. So I don't think growing up, my dad, like he was like, well, 3 to 4 is my piano practice time. I don't think he had that. Maybe he did way before, but where he was at, it was just like, it was discipline by nature. It's kind of the difference between like sadhana bhakti and raganuga bhakti, which is like, first you need the structure to get you up, to get you to show up. And then after a while you're showing up because you want to, but the regularity is still there. So you don't have to force regularity. It's very spontaneous, but it never stops being regular. It just, it increases and it's more kind of organic. So, yeah, I mean, I always wrote songs and sang to myself as a kid. So like really early, like 6, 7, I always had a keyboard in my room. I would tinker around with my dad's keyboard but I wasn't very open about like sharing it. I was always encouraged by my family, but I was really shy. So these songs were there and I'd show them only to like a select few people. And then actually, you know, when Bali and I got together was when my interest in kirtan was really growing. And I came to this realization, which I think, you know, any of you all who do kirtan can relate, which is you become self-obsessed when you're so shy that you can't contribute. Like when your self-consciousness becomes a barrier, like, oh, I don't want to sing. Don't look at me. I won't play cartels. No, I don't want to sing the next one. No. It's like, it goes past the point of like, oh, I'm humble into like literally self-obsession. Mm. Who's looking at me? Who's listening to me? What am I going to sound like? What if I mess up? What? It's just me. And like my meditation has departed. Like I'm not even connected at all. Mm. So I think that being around such unself-conscious kirtaniyas as Bali and Kish and Vish and Gora and Janavi and Achuta and these people who just like, they just show up and they're like, this is what I'm here to do. I'm just going to do it. Mm-hmm. That was so encouraging because it made me think like, oh, that's the vibe. Like there's no ego in that. It's actually, you're extracting the real intention and you're putting your ego aside because you're like, I just need to show up and do it. And a mood of encouragement, a mood of humor, the acknowledgement that like, yes, you are going to mess up. No, you're not going to know the tune and your harmony is good. And like, everybody's going to be fine. So, you know, that was always nice. And I think that experience of kirtan kind of liberating me from my own self-consciousness and pushing me beyond like that self-obsession kind of clicked with my own like original songs, which is like, what if I did those like this? Like, why can't I do that? Why, what's my own hang up? Is it because it's my lyrics? Is it because, you know, just show up and do it. What if I did it in that mood? And through the encouragement of my Puris, actually, who they allowed me to perform my original songs for the first times ever, I was allowed to really put myself out there and try and fail and try and succeed and So really it's a testament, I think, to the power of creative cheerleaders, which is for me that the foundation in anything is your association, but certainly in creativity, like, you know, we need those people who are cheering us on and just like, do it. I'm here. And, you know, we'll stand there and root for you. So that's, yeah, I don't know. I guess, did that answer what you were asking?
What was the question again?
100%. I want to say as well, if Javi is watching, if your father is watching, then hello.
He is watching.
We should definitely acknowledge such an incredible person. And to all of the incredible people watching right now, hello. What was that? What did Jai Jagannath just say? Puru, I missed that.
He said, what a freedom to be freed from one's own self-consciousness.
Mm. I feel like that's such a huge point. Like, Ananda, you were talking about how being both rich and being poor has the ability to completely absorb
become
you.
Self-absorb. Yeah, I can equally become self-absorbed in a space of great wealth and in a space of great poverty. Right. Sometimes we have this idea of, oh, if I'm too wealthy, then I'll be too self-absorbed. Right. Mm-hmm. So similarly, I think in creativity, if I'm putting my art out there, if I'm putting my creativity out there, then I'll be too self-absorbed. But if I'm withholding that natural energy to create and to share, I could also become, it could also be a symptom of self-absorption. So yeah. It's a beautiful point. And I also like this point of creative cheerleaders. And I think, you know, this is something that I often come to a lot of is the great need of relationships and community, right? And how much more that is, or not how much more, but how true that is also within the realm of creativity. That having those people that are there and pushing us along, even when I'm trying to step back and hide from it.
I think in art, it's specific. It's like especially important because of how vulnerable you are when you share your art. You know, we always need people to support us, but when you're trying to like put your creation out into the world, it's just like, hurt me, you know? So having some people there who believe in you, who can encourage you and support you, and that is, I mean, it's fundamental. I think everybody can think of somebody in their life who has been their like support system or lifeline to be able to produce their art. And I've had those since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I continue to have those, and we're like that for each other. I feel like I tell Dania I'm her biggest fan all the time, and I totally go crazy over all the things that she makes, not just because we're together, because I actually am a fan of her music. I'm like, oh God, that's so good. And she's like, you were there when I wrote it. I'm like, I know, but still, like, now I'm realizing how good it was then and now. It's being, having that, you understand what it means to have that for you. And when you're able to kind of be that for someone else, not because you want that, but you're just so moved by their art that you can encourage that, it feeds your soul and it feeds their soul. And then they can be that for someone else, and kind of like you keep the artistry flourishing and the creativity going from one generation to the next, encouraging people to do their art. Because, you know, without that, or artists are sensitive types, you know, we'll just stay inside and write our little songs and make our little things, and no one will see them. And a lot of them are really good and should be shared. And you don't know what, I remember Gora telling me this, like, I mean, it's crazy to even say this was almost 20 years ago. But just like, I didn't even get it then when he said it. And now that I'm like more in my artist self, I'm like, totally. He's like, I remember I was like 17, 18 maybe. And he's a little older than me. He was like 24, 25, 23. And I'm just saying, man, you know, even if I just shared this with my friends, like even if the only people that ever heard this were my friends and they liked it, that would be fulfilling. And I was just, you know, whatever it was at the time that the project was, I was like, yeah, you know, and now I get it. I'm like, I have projects that one or two people might have seen, but seeing them respond to that or getting that, it gives you literally encouragement. I say that all the time when people, they say nice things. I'm like, thank you for your encouragement. Mm-hmm. And I literally feel you are giving me courage. Like courage is in there. And I feel encouraged. You've given me courage to continue. And then maybe share it again in the future to more people. And it's so important for artists to get that kind of support from the youngest, from when they're kids, to get that. Even if it doesn't matter, you're 40, 50 years old, you're still going to be sensitive about yourself.
Can I ask, how do you then bring these two aspects together of like discipline, organization, and the Sangha? Because, you know, trying to organize oneself is difficult, and then trying to organize oneself in a group and organize a group is also difficult. And I'm just really interested in, like, what do you prefer now
in where you are in life? Do you prefer to work alone? Do you prefer to invite people to collaborate with you? Do you feel like it's essential to have a sangha and to have people on board with you? Or do you kind of go through different phases?
I think we each kind of thrive a little differently, like because of our personality differences. Like Bali's much more extroverted, and he takes so much energy and is so replenished by being around people. You know, we just had a Mayapuri's meeting here, and he comes off of that very like high with creative energy and expansive and stuff. My nature is a little different. I'm more of a hermit. I like my own quiet time. I like composing in private. I like, you know, kind of just like putting my headphones on and, you know, trying out different sounds for like hours. So I think there's a difference of style of what comes first, like the cart or the horse, but we always need both. I think that you always need to then connect and come outside of the shell so that you're not so much in your own head, which might be my thing. And then for Bali's, you know, I can see also how nourishing it is for him to like take time and be with his own creative thoughts. But I think with anything relating to Sangha, it's also about finding like-minded creatives, just like like-minded devotees, or, you know, finding certainly mentors. So association upwards in experience and realization, where you can really like what, you know, Bali was, you know, Gora is that for us, or my dad, you know, people who are more experienced, who have more kind of, who have lived their art a little longer or more expansively, and then we can lean into that association for guidance. And then also finding like-minded musicians, people who also want to do art in a way that just kind of naturally clicks. I think it's okay to find sangha that feels right in terms of chemistry, even if that means you don't connect with everybody. Maybe I'm just saying that as an introvert, but but I think that, you know, it's better to have a small circle with people that you connect very deeply with, and where it's like extremely safe to be sharing in that vulnerability, because then that cheerleading feels like very authentic. So for me, it's a lot about like chemistry and compatibility, and then finding your own rhythm in that, even if it looks differently. Like we work differently, but we're each other's cheerleaders.
Would you say that then leads to confidence? Because confidence and the arts are, like, sometimes they kind of seem like oil and water, you know. Like Bali was saying, you know, it's kind of like you share something in the world, it's like, you know, please hurt me. I'm sure so many people can relate to that experience, because it's so like, you know, you've just been like making this creative baby, and this, you know, you want to share it with the world. And like Dania, you were saying how, because you were born into a family of creatives and you had the association of all these other confident people, it was very easy for you to step into different spaces. But would either of you have advice for people who are very engaged in creativity but perhaps lack the confidence and maybe don't know where to find the right sangha, find the right people, find the right kind of process? Would you have any advice for people?
I think Dania said something about finding like-minded people. And it's interesting because I feel it's almost the opposite in a certain way. Like-minded in that you have a chemistry that is compatible. You have a chemistry that is compatible. Mm-hmm. But if you have a bunch of super shy, introverted artists mm-hmm. getting together and they're all the same, they're not going to challenge each other to grow. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's finding someone who you gel with, that you have a compatibility, your personalities mm-hmm. can like harmonize, and you can have a good relationship, and you can have some kind of affection and love and intimacy towards one another. But finding people who complete the parts of you that are lacking. So if you are, you know, super sensitive and just a singer-songwriter and you're inside in your own head all the time, find somebody who is bold and who can challenge you to get out of that. And, you know, or find somebody who's organized and says, hey, like, that's a great song, but it needs a hook, because you've just sang five different verses and they're all to a different tune. It sounds like two separate songs. So like, scrap those two last verses, put a hook in between those, make this verse a bridge, and you got a song, bro. You know, all of a sudden you get someone who has the things that you don't have. You're just like art, flowers, creativity, misty visions of, you know, meadows. And then some other person says, let's capture that. Let's capture that and let's put it in a vessel and let's package it for other people. That's not how you think. But the fact that both of you have come together, then you're able to bring something. So I think, you know, one of the reasons that, for example, like the Mayapuris are successful is that we all have our roles in the party, and we all complement one another. Obviously, there's always going to be conflicts in any group, but the fact that, you know, one person might lean this way, and then with Vishnkish might lean in one direction, and then I will be the pendulum. Like in many, I'm usually that in a lot of groups. I find like whatever that I'm like the opposite guy. They're like, oh, look at all these sweet, like demure, humble Vaishnavs, and they're like, we need a guy who can say, you know, like the not pleasant thing to the other guy. Or whatever. Like sometimes I end up being that person because of my background and my musical personality and character. So finding people who compliment you, because if you're in that kind of situation, if you get a mixer who's super demure and soft and sensitive, and they're like, I don't know, what do you think? And you're like, bro, I already wrote the song. What do you like? You tell me, you know, you need somebody to help you, like, you know, finish the parts that you're not able to do yourself. So although Daniel was saying like-minded, I think it's actually important to surround yourself with, it was kind of a big thing like 8 or 9 years ago about how Abraham Lincoln had created a cabinet of adversaries. I can't remember the word that they used, but he didn't surround himself with people that just agreed with him. He surrounded himself with a lot of his biggest opponents because that, for whatever reason, he thought he didn't want sycophants. I don't know how to pronounce that. Yeah. They just like bounce. You don't want that. You want somebody who's going to get you to grow, and growth doesn't happen in comfort. It doesn't. Like the comfort zone, that's not where growth happens. It happens outside of that.
That's a mind-blowing point. What would you say then to people who feel like they have to be the whole package? Because that's like a hang-up I have and I've had as a creative and as a aspiring spiritual practitioner as well, is like, I feel like I have to be able to do everything. And so many people get burnt out, like talking about just music specifically, like I have to write the song and I have to, you know, record the song and mix the song and master the song and distribute the song. And then you have to hype yourself up on social media. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, it's a lot of pressure, I think, you know, but what you're saying, it seems, Bally, is like, you don't have to be the whole thing. And actually it can be good to know that, you know, where you're strong and where you're weak, and that there are other people out there that can support you and compliment you. And I think that's a really powerful point, actually.
I have an idea. I'd like to hear what Danya has to say. I do have a very clear idea, but I'm talking a lot. So
I'm very clear.
But what do you think about it?
I agree.
You agree? You're like, yes.
Group think.
I have to like stop myself. It's something that like Danya has taught me that you can actually change after the age of whatever people decide where people can't change anymore. That's not true. You can. You just have to like pause and like self like acknowledge. So I realize I talk a lot. So I'm trying to change that. But I believe that if you work on yourself, then that community, whether it's one person or whether it's a village, they will be given to you. Krishna will give that to you. Yeah. And I think that applies more to just artists. You know, it applies to somebody who, and I've found myself giving this same exact kind of like advice or encouragement or my experiences, at least, and sharing this with people who are asking me the same question from different views. So people have asked, like, I want to find a spiritual teacher. I want to find a spiritual master. And I'm like, work on yourself. Truly, like, do the work. Like, actually dedicate that time to see that you're growing, that you're not the same person spiritually that you were 6 months ago or a year ago. Actually, it like, really take a look inside. Mm-hmm. And see, like, am I growing? Am I still doing those things? Am I still in that habit? Am I a more spiritual person? And as that happens, that guru will be revealed to you. Krishna will send that person to you. I've had people ask that when like they're like in between relationships or like, I can't find the right person. I'm such and such age. I'm like, listen, you can't, it's going to come when it's meant to come. Work on yourself. That person who has not come into your life yet, because you're not ready to welcome that person into your life. What are those things? You work on that, and then it will, that person will be revealed. All of the things that you needed to work on to build, to evolve, those need to happen first. And the same thing as an artist, you know, it's like, what do you need? Work on your art. Work, if you work on your art hard enough and long enough, someone will come. And I use this example with you, Kaylee, because that basically happened, like between us. I didn't know you, and you'd been chipping away at your art for a long time. And after you, I don't know, made 100 videos or a dozen or that, whatever it was, you were a musician of a certain experience and artistic caliber. And over 10 years, 15 years, you developed it. And then all of a sudden, I was like, I want to work with you. Like, I want to help you get this song out. Like, have you recorded professionally? And you're like, no. So that just happened. It wasn't, you didn't have to like write a bunch of emails or join a message board. You just did your thing and you worked on your art, and then it came. And then now I've noticed, and this has happened to so many people in my circle, where it's like, yeah, you see, then that thing builds and it builds and it builds upon itself. And as soon, what's a tiny little, snowflake becomes a little snowball and becomes an avalanche of momentum. So work on yourself with true like sincerity, which is, can be very burning and difficult to do, but evolve and grow. And then the people who are meant to encourage you on that path and take you to the next level, whether it's a spiritual teacher, whether it's the partner you're going to spend the rest of your life with, or whether it's the artistic community that's going to propel you forward, they will manifest when you've worked hard enough and you've made yourself ready through your work. Mm.
I love this point that you're bringing up, the facsimile between creativity and our experience in life, right? That and I think this is one important thing that we really want to bring out in this podcast, is that this is not just a podcast for creatives or for artists or musicians, right? But it's a point at which to look at all of our endeavors and how do we upgrade all of those endeavors. And I think this point of finding it, I've asked my teacher in terms of our meditation practice, how do I improve my chanting, right? And the instruction, one of the instructions I've been given is look for your own sincerity. When, as you're chanting, as you're meditating, try to hear the sincerity in your own chanting. Right, to when we put in that work, how things are around it, when that determination becomes set, how the world around it moves in order to accommodate that determination, that desire. Mm. It's a really powerful point. Thank you.
I've started using like positive affirmations. Don't judge me, okay? Because for a while, I thought positive affirmations were a bit like whack. So I don't know if many people do these things. Like, I always thought it was a bit whack to like look at yourself in the mirror and be like, you know, you're worth it, baby, or whatever it is.
Is that how you start?
That's the first affirmation of the day.
You're worth it.
Get the London look. Now, I'm wondering, like, I don't know if you personally do things like affirmations, but like resonating with what Bali said. And first off, just so everyone knows, my gratitude toward Bali as an individual and what he's done for me over the past 6 months is I literally can't put it into words. One day I will be able to put it into words. However, I've realized with these affirmations, I have like 10, and every morning I've been like saying these affirmations. And I realized that I naturally ordered them in such a way where they're kind of like the integrity of each affirmation is increasing as I go on. And I had this realization today that actually like there are certain bits on myself I have to work on before I can attain like higher realms of my potential, you know? And it's quite mystical what you're saying, Bali, how like instead of worrying about, is the facility going to come? First, you have the vision, you know, instead of like waiting to have the facility, first have the vision and then the facility will come somehow. So I realized like
that point that you're saying, Krishna says that in the Gita to Arjuna, like have your faith and then I will give you the intelligence by which you can come to me. And it's like, you just do that. Like that will come. Krishna will give that to you. Sometimes, especially I'm like a left brain kind of guy. So I'm like, no, I want to understand Krishna. I want to understand cosmic creation and the meaning and all, like, I just get that way. I get super analytical and skeptical and I want to like break everything down. And Krishna's like, listen, you will get that later. First this, then I will grant that to you. And that has been super life-changing for me to realize that that's not going to come from me. It will, like, I will do the work and the faith and have all that stuff, and then Krishna will give it accordingly. It's something that we've been hearing since I was born, basically, all these shlokas and all these verses, and I'm seeing them manifest in different ways in my life, and things that may not seem not necessarily related to Krishna Arjuna in the battlefield. I see that, and I'm saying, yeah, Krishna is going to grant this to me, or it's going to grant this to you. In due course.
Mm. Wow. I'm aware that time is pressing on. I really wanted to ask as well if either of you or both of you would like to offer something creative or musical, like at the end of this podcast. We'd really love to hear something from you. But if it's okay, I wanted to specifically ask Danya a question, which is how do these concepts and aspects of creativity manifest for you on a daily basis now? Because I'm so impressed, Daniel, when I see like everything you do and everything you are and how you still have time to be creative, you know. There's really no excuse for anyone. Like you make it so hard to have an excuse to be creative, you know. And how are these things like happening for you and manifesting for you on a daily basis? In terms of like the discipline, the sangha, the working on yourself and trusting that Krishna or the universe will provide what you need on the right day? Or are you ever disappointed that, you know, things aren't given to you? Or I'd be really interested to hear like how these things are manifesting for you on a daily basis in your creative life, you know?
Yeah, I think when I allow it to be daily, it manifests daily. And if I only allow it to manifest weekly or monthly, then it'll manifest then. So it's really like I am my own greatest like self-limiting factor.
Yeah.
Right. So if I show up daily, there's like a huge chance it'll happen. But if I'm not even giving myself, you know, the time and the space, you know, Vaisheshika Prabhu, when he talks about book distribution, he's like, our goal is not to distribute a book. Our goal is to touch the pavement. And when you touch the pavement, you're done. Everything else after that is essentially a miracle. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of what I feel like the creative process is like touch the keys, just show up and turn the computer on, load up Logic, sing the thing to yourself out loud in a voice memo, just show up and see what happens. And like that part, I think, can be the most unself-conscious part, which is not taking yourself so seriously. You know, I don't remember what book this was, but I read some book on creativity where they were saying you're less likely to have success if you think of yourself as a pro. But if you think of yourself as an amateur, then like the world is your oyster, basically. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to mess up. You can do things casually. You can be a bit more free flowing. You don't take yourself so seriously. You have like a sense of humor and some levity to the situation, which, you know, creativity has to be playful. If you delete that element of play, then like, what are you doing? It takes out the flavor of everything that's happening. So I think any time that I've taken myself too seriously, or I put like too much of that, the problem is not discipline. Because you can be undisciplined and take yourself too seriously. I know, because I've done it. And you can be very disciplined and have a lot of levity about it and just show up and have that disposition to play. And then that's when you thrive. So I don't think equating discipline with like dryness or heaviness is necessary. I think that it can be very like, yeah, show up every day for a play date, essentially. And so I think to the extent that I can keep that playful, light energy and allow just whatever happens to happen or not happen, which is okay too, then I'm able to keep the flow. And it helps to do things like the Artist Way, which I've done, and that's a 12-week course. And so there's some structure, some guidance, some instruction, you know, not imposing on myself, like, oh, I have to come up with a system. It's like, no, there's a system already out there. Just hop on that system, you know, or the 100-day project, which like so many artists are doing so many amazing things. If you just ask the question, what would happen if I touch the pavement 100 days in a row? Like, well, I don't know. Let's see. So it's kind of like that openness, that exploratory nature, that openness and that question. If you use it as a question, then it's like you can do no wrong, because all that's going to happen is you're going to get information. Oh, 100 days is really hard. I hop off the wagon at 30 days and I realize, wow, 30 days is really productive. Okay, that's information. Or I completed 100 days and like all these ideas took off and I have products that are at the end of the road of all this work. Okay, that's information too. I don't like doing it every day. I like, okay, whatever. Whatever it is, just allowing information to flow, and that'll keep setting you up for future stuff. So I think if anything, I thrive and my creative life and my life in general feels more full of creativity when I just like don't take it so super seriously, when I don't take myself so super seriously, but I still show up and give it kind of honest work and focus. And a little asterisk on that is that it's really hard when you have a job, when you have a family, you have responsibilities, you have other services, you know, like you said, we both have so many other hats that we wear. Being in a partnership with somebody who supports you and who helps you create that space, even when you can't really create it for yourself, that's a gift. So I wouldn't say in any way that I'm capable of doing this by myself. You know, Bali will sometimes be like, why don't you have half an hour? Like, go jump in the studio now. Like, I'll watch the baby. Or, you know, like, where are you at with this song? Or you should write the mixer and, you know, that kind of stuff. So having that mutual accountability, it helps you kind of drop a pin of like, oh, this is where I'm at. I get it. So you see yourself in relation to someone else who really cares for your art. That really, it holds up a nice mirror to where you're at and helps you keep the flow going, because someone else is like, hey, like, what's happening with that? You know?
You got to show up to play.
Yeah.
Should make a t-shirt. Show up to play. I wanted to highlight a few of these questions. We are kind of coming near the end, but and I want to hear you guys some, if you have any creative, you know, offering to share. I'm also very interested in your 100-day project specifically. It's like all of these little teasers of like what is actually being created. I hear the sounds, you know, your daughter's just making some, like, you know, she's beatboxing along with it, you know, she's doing so many, you know, so many things that are just like leaking out. I'm so curious. I'm wondering if there's anything that you can tell us about what it is that you're kind of alluding to in this 100-day project.
Yeah. So my 100-day project is literally 100 days of touching the pavement. Like, what happens when I show up in any way to the keys, to my voice, to the emails I have to write, but all music related and all with these specific kind of few songs that I've had lined up, you know. And a lot of it has to do with my role and my exploration as a producer, because I'm self-producing these songs. And that is a bit of a challenge because I don't find myself to be technically very savvy. So I'm learning as I go. And I think it's kind of cool. I don't know that many kind of girl producers in our line of work. And so it's a nice concept, you know, of also like allowing myself to be visible, because I might be doing all this behind closed doors anyways, but allowing myself to be visible and posting every day and that kind of thing. And knowing that that might make a difference to women of further generations or to other artists, you know. I'm sure you guys have experienced, as artists, you don't need to speak with another artist to be super like engaged and encouraged by what they're doing.
Yeah,
there's artists that I don't regularly speak to, but I'll see and I'm just like, wow, that's like amazing. And I'm so happy that they allowed themselves to be visible, because it was what gave me enthusiasm to go kind of do my own thing. So that's kind of what that is about.
I'm excited for all the everything that's already come of it. And even, and I know for myself, it's been a lot of inspiration too, because I'm also in that place of, we just currently, we have so much capacity to produce our own music. And both of you have produced albums yourself that are just phenomenal. And you've used all the tools at your availability, but the fact that you're going through and produce, like the last song you released, Thief, right? This was the first song, if I'm correct, that you kind of produced all on your own, right? And it was gorgeous. It was immaculate. There's so much in that really, you know, I think a well-produced song brings you deeper into the music, into the experience. And I experienced that with that song. And so it's very inspiring seeing you go through this process and also making that process public. Because I'm also in this space of, okay, I have these songs that I've written and I want to start recording them. I want to start producing them, and I can do that myself, right? I have the capacity. And so extending it to that idea of the community, thank you for distributing inspiration around that also.
Thank you for that feedback. I'm so excited to hear your productions.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask a few of these questions that were coming up in the chat. A lot of people, the chat's blowing up. People are really appreciating this conversation. There was one that was coming earlier. Let me see, where'd that go? Dave Amadova wanted to know your blood type, actually. So,
man, you know what?
He doesn't even know.
I know Dunya's blood type, and I don't know mine.
That's because mine's like, cute. Why was my blood type?
Be positive.
Be positive.
Wow.
I was like, if anything ever happens, and they're like, what's your wife's blood type? I got to know, just in case. Mine, it's like, take me, Lord, I'm ready to go. You know?
But, so this that's amazing. This is a question actually from Kelly's father. How are you coping not being able to go on tour right now? Has that been a challenge? I mean, you just had a baby this last year, so it's like that could also be quite a blessing. Or what's your feeling about that?
It's rough. It's rough. We love to travel, and there's a certain fulfillment that comes from sharing your art. And because our art is intrinsically connected with our belief and our practice, it fulfills you on multiple, like the artistic part is fulfilled, the exploratory, you know, like learning about the world, and then also feeling like you're doing service to your spiritual teachers and your spiritual lineage. So it leaves a very big hole in the chest, but luckily, this year has been a good year for nesting, because we have Namamalia, who is, she's squished her little chubby little self into that vacancy and is filling our life with a lot of joy. She is chubby.
I appreciate it's our chubby baby, because every so often I'll get a message and he's like, she's so chunky.
It's actually sparked some of my friends. We're saying, well, we're going to have a competition who can have the chunkiest baby. Because I think you guys are definitely Namamalia. She's
she's up there.
Yeah, she's up there.
She's up there. We do our best. Avocado toast is my. I
was gonna say
avocado toast.
Here's another question from Balaram Perez. He says, "Why do you think the second album? You had mentioned you released the first album in 2010, and then Nine Islands came out such a while later. What happened?"
All that touring and traveling that we were just talking about, you can't record if you're on the road.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you get home from touring and you just need a break and you need to work on other things. And
well, also you guys fully self-produced the second album, which is like, that's huge.
Yeah. The second album, it took, you know, there was a 9-year gap in between them, but actually we had started production on it only 5 or 6 years after the first one. Yeah, it just getting things right. And, you know, really, if you sit down and grind it out, you can get stuff done very quickly. But we always find things to get in our own way. And I can spout out a bunch of excuses. But the reality is we didn't sit in the studio for 3 or 4 months and say, we're not doing anything till we get this done. If you do that, it's amazing. You can create I mean, look at, there are so many like masterpieces in music that if you say like, oh, what happened? And they were like, oh, this came together. All it took was for the people to get together and put the work in. So we just had a lot of projects and a lot of travel and a lot of stuff. And we decided at one point it's time to show how much we've evolved as musicians, to show our new compositions and just have fun in the studio and create these like legacy markers of like that album, our Murdunga album is from 2010. And I can still show that to people that what we put in at that point, and then Nine Islands is going to be that we'll be able to show. I would with pride show that to anybody and be like, this is what we did. This is the proof and evidence of our creative, you know, work. It was work, a lot of work. And we just didn't find the time and prioritize that when we were working on other things.
Well, it goes to this point of really deciding what it is that you want and sitting down and doing it, being determined, right? Yeah. In life, in any creative endeavor, it goes to this point of touching the pavement. Let me just touch the pavement every single day. Let me commit. I think commitment is such a huge thing to accomplish anything, really. I have to decide what that is and then sit down and do it. So it's a wonderful, wonderful point. Yeah, overall, people are loving this conversation. I'm wondering if you guys are willing now, would you be willing to share some kind of drop of creative nectar, some performance that you could share with us?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's see what you can do as far as setup here, because we're all...
You can take your time. I'd also, before you go, it'd be really nice to hear... We can stream your music and what you've produced so far on all of the major platforms. You can check out Danya and you can check out the Mayapuris and Bali Rico as
also in the comments below.
Okay, great.
Music.
But yeah, thank you so much for being here, both of you, and thanks for sharing this. And before you go as well, it'd be great to hear what maybe we can expect from you in terms of like releases and where people can find you a little bit as well. And Ananda, can you maybe like make our screens a bit smaller or something? Is there a way you feature them?
I am working on a song right now, which is, it doesn't have a working title, but it's going to be really amazing. Kaylee, you've heard a little bit of a draft of it. It's coming out soon. I don't know when. I don't know any details. I don't have the name. But most of the words are written and the beat is there. And I'm super in love with it. Danya's a genius. She's producing it. We're doing it together. I'm producing a song by a very dear artist friend of mine called Kaylee Kanana Banana, Kaylee the Man.
Say who?
And that will be, that's actually, I was in the studio this morning working on getting a rough mix out and reaching out to the mixer. So Kaylee's new song, which
I was going to say actually, because Balaram Perez just asked that question about the album, and I was with Balaram like a few months ago, and he was asking me, when do you think the album's going to be out? Last year, and I said, oh, you know, probably like January or something. And like yesterday, Bali and myself finished like the second song of the album. it's a long thing, you know, it's a long thing, but it's for me as well. I like write the song, record it, share it online next day, new song, record it, share it online. So,
We're doing it right. This song is going to be really amazing. And Danny, you want to tell them about your track?
Yeah. My next one out is called Anymore, and I'm hoping to release it in the next few weeks, actually. It all depends on how quickly we can go through the mixing and mastering, but it's on the way, and it's a product of the 100 Day Project, so it works.
Amazing. So please share something with us before we all have to depart.
Okay, can you guys hear the piano okay?
Yes.
Okay. Sanso ki mana pe simru mein bika na
अपने मन के मैं जानूं और पी के मन की राह अपने मन के मैं जानूं और पी के मन की राह सांसों की माला पे
Ananda.
Oh my goodness.
I'm in love.
Oh,
I'm in love with them both.
I'm like, I felt like my whole soul was being melted in a loving shower of.
He's speechless.
Oh my.
Get the doctor.
Oh my God. That's so nice. I've had that song in my head like the past 3 days.
Aww.
And then it, like, just coming out live was just magical.
Yeah, I get to listen to this all the time. This is why I freak out. And I'm like, you need to get in the studio. Finish this track. Have you done the tracking? Can you do the harmonies? Like, what? Literally, no lie. Did I not? I told her, have you written the mixer? Did you write the mixer? She has this anymore song. Or have you written them? No, can you do that right now?
He's good. He's on it.
He's scary.
I'm her biggest fan.
Well, thank you for your persistence and insistence. It's benefiting the entire world. So, oh my goodness, thank you so much for both of you being with us today and sharing everything that you did, all the insights. It's been powerful. I'm deeply moved and inspired. Kelly, do you have anything you want to say?
I don't know. I'm just like blown away by you both as people, and I'm so glad that in one way, like, I feel like the internet is such an evil place, but I'm so grateful that this is possible, you know, and I'm so grateful that this is possible and that other people can watch something like this as well. This is like such a great resource. So I'm very grateful for Bodica for giving us this platform. And this is like episode 4 of the Take Note podcast. So we're still in our nucleus form, but this is just so awesome. So thank you for giving us your time. I know you're both like extremely busy, and just really, really grateful.
Thank you guys. This is so cool what you guys are doing. You know, this is like such quality content, and I agree that the internet is so spooky, but knowing that you guys are really, you know, churning out all this beautiful stuff, and you know, it's kind of the silver lining to this whole COVID lockdown thing. I mean, I feel like my friendship with each of you guys has had the opportunity to flourish because we get to connect on topics that we feel very strongly about, and this is the new dimension of Sangha for now. And so it's so nice that you guys are taking advantage and using this platform, and thank you to Bodica for always, you know, really creating a space for this quality connection to be made. You know, you guys are doing something so important. So thank you.
And Dania, you're also doing a Bodica podcast, the Finding the Center.
It's the
podcast for women, right?
I've been a guest facilitator, and it's been a very cool exploration of kind of women's issues from a fresh perspective. And I really appreciate the opportunity to dive into that. And I think I might be joining a few more Bodica podcasts over the next few weeks. So be on the lookout for that. And always, you know, we'd love to connect with everybody through social media. So give us a follow. Bali Rico, Dania Music on Facebook, on Instagram. I would love to hear your feedback, stay connected, and be able to share more stuff with everybody.
Wonderful.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.